This is The View from Tab. I'm Jim Minnick.
I'm John Cruz.
And I'm Mike Beats.
And tonight we're going to talk about tournaments, how to run a tournament. The three of us run a lot of tournaments. And we wanted to get some guests on here, and there was some confusion about getting the guests, unfortunately, because I did solicit people. And then I thought I had somebody lined up, and then it turned out he couldn't do it. So I apologize to the people I said, oh, I already have somebody. And the person who said who I wanted and isn't here knows who he is. And I won't tell anybody his name is Palmer. And, well, he'll be here next time or at some point. But anyhow, we want to talk about tournaments. And we want to talk about all the things that go into running a tournament. And I wanted to step back to the absolute first moment of running a tournament, which is deciding when to, or even why to run a tournament, although maybe just being insane would be the motivation point, but certainly when to run a tournament. But maybe the real question
I
is why
is a great way to start.
Yeah, so why does one run it? Why? I mean, I inherited a tournament, although I have worked on starting some other ones. John, you inherited.
That's true.
A tournament, but
when I was in college, I started a tournament, work to revive the tournament that I inherited when I came to Bronx Science. I think Beats has both inherited and started his own tournament.
Is the Victory Briefs tournament is a new tournament, relatively speaking, isn't it?
Yeah, I think its first year was 2002. Victor actually started that tournament with, I think, as
Is that the year Alan and Gingian won it, or was that?
I don't know. I think I may have been there the first year. But I didn't start running it until about 2005, I guess, when I moved out here. But I did start the Harvard Westlake tournament.
Cool.
Okay, so the question
is, why start a tournament?
Why start? Because I've had a lot of people say, "Oh, I want to start a tournament. I want to have a tournament." It's a lot of work. Why do people want to start a tournament?
I want to say a few things on that because I think that that's a really important question. I think especially if you are in an area where there are a lot of debate tournaments, that's the most important question to me in my mind because I look at tournaments as experiences ultimately, right? Who are you catering towards? What are you trying to provide for them? What are they going to leave home thinking about your tournament? Those are really important questions to consider, especially if you're in an area of the country that is debate rich. That is, there are tournaments on every weekend or almost every weekend. What is different about your tournament that's going to make people want to go to it? That's an important thing to think about. Is your tournament striving to have a TOC bid? And if so, why, right? Because very few tournaments ultimately are going to have TOC bids, and the tournament or the debate community, I think, is strengthened by having lots of tournaments to cater to lots of different kinds of crowds. Is your tournament going to be for younger kids, for older kids? Is it going to have a unique spin? What kind of format it's going to have, et cetera, et cetera? Those are kinds of things that are really important to consider.
Yeah, I mean, there is a sense that the season has a personality. And certainly each weekend tends to have a personality. So if there is some gap that somebody is trying to fill, that seems to be a good thing. But one of the things you mentioned is absolutely true. Everybody wants to have a tournament, and then they think, oh, I should have a TOC bid now. I mean, I think an awful lot of people want to have a TOC bid for their tournament for no particular good reason that I can see. I guess they think it's the imprimatur that, oh, my tournament is good because I have a TOC bid, which I certainly don't know.
It almost guarantees a minimum draw.
That's true.
I guess it does, but
on the other hand, the question is, and I still think this is a pretty valid question: how big do you want your tournament to be? Your tournament doesn't have to be the biggest tournament in the universe. You're right that it does.
Sizes can be a problem. I mean, first of all, building space and how many rooms you have and all this kind of stuff is self-limiting. You can just fit so many people wherever you have them. But yeah, even assuming you have the space, I mean, the idea that you're going to get a TOC bid is pretty audacious and unlikely.
Well, if you're not in a debate-rich area that happens to also have a lot of colleges nearby, you can't. I mean, you can't expect to make money at a tournament. I mean, for the VBT, that's sort of our situation. And, you know, we have to fly in a ton of judges.
You don't have judges there? I mean, I know you bring in judges, but I'm surprised that there aren't. I mean, you're in Los Angeles. You know, there
should
be judges.
Think of the schools here. I mean, USC and UCLA are, you know, they're good schools, but they're not where a lot of the debaters go.
I guess so. Anyhow, the I mean, one of the things, and like John is saying, I mean, you have to look at what else is out there and what your own goal is going to be with a tournament. And a lot of places, I get the impression that people are sort of pressured by their schools to have a tournament, or pressured by their team or something like that.
I think it's more pressured by their team. I don't think many high schools want to host a tournament, right? Or at least it's not something that would be the first thing on the school's mind.
Yes, I mean, that's fair. I mean, for a debate tournament is not like a basketball game. A basketball game takes one room and two locker rooms.
Right.
And a debate tournament takes every single classroom that you can get in your school, and there's going to be problems when people are in every single classroom. So you're right, schools don't necessarily want
that. I actually want to jump here and say that this is also an important question to be asking yourself, even if you're not a first-year tournament, but if you want to think about how to improve your tournament, this is still the central question to be asking. I feel the need to interject a bit of wisdom that Mike Beats once shared with me. I have three or four or five little phrases that I try to guide my thoughts at all times. And this one that Beat said to me many years ago, I think is appropriate here. If you always do what you've always done, then you'll always get what you've always gotten. And when you're trying to improve your tournament, the first and most important question to ask is, why am I running this? And it's the, you know, no matter if it's the first year you're running it or many years later and you want to, you know, you feel your tournament needs to improve, it needs to have a bigger draw, it needs to have a different kind of focus. That's the question you need to ask yourself. So the first question, why are you running this tournament? And then I think that the question of when will the tournament run logically follows, right? Where on the count?
What would be the reasons why people would run a tournament? I mean, I know for me, the VBT has a very different purpose than the Harvard Westlake tournament. I didn't start the VBT, but the VBT was to be a national tournament for Southern California.
Right. And that
I guess
that
I saw the.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and for me on the East Coast, it was the same idea of why was I trying to revive the New York City Invitational. I think that it was important to have a national tournament hosted by a high school. I also think that if you're a school – this I do have a fairly strong opinion about. I do feel if you're a school that travels a lot and competes a lot, I almost feel like you do have a sort of moral obligation to try to give something back to the debate community. And I always impress that on my own debaters from the beginning of the year. So, you know, we are ultimately big takers in the debate community in the sense that we go to tons of tournaments. We get housed at lots of tournaments. We, you know, try to compete with large squads wherever we go. So it's particularly important for me on, I guess, sort of like a visceral level that we provide a really high quality experience for the kids who come to our tournament. On the other hand, I've toyed around with ideas of hosting another smaller tournament later in the year that would be geared way more towards younger kids, right? I mean, there's no place on the schedule for me to do something like that, but it would have a different purpose, much like what Beats is saying about how VBT is different, I guess, than Harvard Westlake. I'm assuming that's the second tournament you were going to mention, Beats.
Yeah, I mean, for Harvard Westlake, it was just, I mean, when I moved to Southern California, I really wanted to, one thing I realized is that because of the league system in California, it's really hard to get all the really good debaters to compete on the same weekend in the same area because they're sort of bound by this league system in which you have to attend certain league tournaments and it sort of separates everyone. So I was hoping that there could – I mean, I think there are literally – there's just a handful of high schools that host non-league tournaments in Southern California. Most of them are run by colleges. So I wanted to just run a tournament that would sort of bring, you know, I don't have any aspirations for the Harvard Westlake tournament to get large or anything like that. But to draw from our little Southern California, Las Vegas, maybe Phoenix eventually, and then we get a couple schools from the Bay Area. But that's about it. I don't think I would want it to be much bigger. Like I said, it's expensive to have a lot of judges, to be able to hire a lot of judges in Southern California. Now, my school doesn't require that we make money on the tournament. They don't let us sell concessions. They don't, you know, they don't, they want everything to be all inclusive. So luckily I have parents who, you know, I just tell them to take them the food and they just do everything. They provide all the food and all the.
When you say that, that actually raises another reason I think people want to have a tournament is to make money.
Sure.
And, I don't think they realize that to actually run a good tournament, you're not going to make a lot of money. Because as you're saying, I mean, I have the same thing. I don't have to fly people in, but I spend absolutely more money on judges than anything else that I buy. And I'm not even buying, like, you know, great TOC judges. I mean, I'm just buying, you know, the judges that, you know, I like to bring my alumni and stuff like that. But, you know, that does cost money. And that has it costs me the lion's share of the income out of my big tournament.
Yeah, because it's not just you can't just look at the judge cost as being just whatever their fee is. It's also it's feeding them. It's probably housing them, their transportation costs, all those things, add up to what it costs to bring in judges. I mean, if you're spending, $200 for a judge for a weekend, you're probably spending probably close to 300 per judge.
Right. And the thing is that I think this is the first test of the new tournament director, because there's sort of a resistance to spend that money. But the reality is, if you want a quality tournament, you have to hire judges.
Yeah, I think that's the first thing. First thing I look at when I look at a tournament is if they brought in some judges or if they just have whatever they could hobble together from their own parents or something like that.
There is one and only one way I think that you can get away with this, and this would be if you were running a novice-only tournament and somehow you had a large enough team to have kids judge and help you run the tournament.
But you're going
to
have a different standard for a novice tournament.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm saying.
That's one of the things that I wanted to mention that too. Now, I inherited a tournament, and there's a long tradition of that tournament, and so there's not a lot of question about why I would want to do that. That's pretty obvious. But the other thing, and you know, John, you and I both do this. We work in the MHL, but of course we inherited that too, and we've developed it and developed it and done some things. But one of the things that I have been very strong advocate of, and most people have bought into this, is we have eliminated the so-called JV divisions around here and replace them with novice divisions. So I have felt that there is a strong need for places for novices to debate that weren't here, and especially at colleges. I mean, we've got them at, I mean, not at Yale, but it doesn't make sense at Yale because that's like in the early in the season, but at Columbia and at UPenn,
Princeton.
And Princeton, we have put in novice divisions that get filled up. I mean, they are very popular divisions.
Jump in and acknowledge that there has actually been some controversy about this. There's a couple.
There should be. I don't. I mean, we pretty much did this. Okay, we're going to do this, and I would expect a little bit of controversy to arise.
Sure, and I do think that the whole idea of what divisions are going to offer is you know, part and parcel with the why am I running this tournament question. I think, I am sort of on record being generally disapproving of JV divisions. I think JV divisions really only make sense if you are really limiting the entry limits on varsity. Like your goal is to run a very elite varsity tournament, because in those kinds of cases, the Glenbrooks is a great example of this. The JV division is extremely competitive. I mean, it's a very meaningful experience for the kids who are competing it with really high quality judging for a JV division. Mm-hmm. And so in tournaments like that, sure, junior varsity I think makes sense. But I agree.
I mean, it makes sense at Yale because of the timing of the year.
Right. And novice, I mean, if we're going to just speak to, you know, the potential tournament director, the other thing to consider, of course, is that it's easier to make money on a novice division. I do not run a novice division in my own tournament, so I'm not profiting from this, but it's true. I mean, if you have a division where you're comfortable having seniors judge, if that's kosher in your area of the country, running a novice division is generally a little easier because you have at least a couple of free judges, as it were, if you have enough older kids on your team to judge. Yeah. So that's another thing that should, you know, is a fair point to consider.
But I'll throw this out because I go to a lot of tournaments and I work in a lot of tab rooms that have these novice divisions and that they are judged by upperclassmen. And as a general rule, the upperclassmen at the school that is hosting come and go like little prima donnas. They are not there for the whole tournament. This is almost universally true, and it is one thing that people need to keep an eye on. If you're going to have your kids work for the weekend, I don't care what kind of tournament you're running, I don't care what job you give them, the weekend starts before the tournament and it ends after the tournament. And people aren't... I don't see people in control. This is skipping ahead to, you know, point 72, but I don't see people in control. You have to control them, and they have to be there for the whole thing. But at some tournaments, they are. Unquestionably, at some tournaments, they are. But often, too many tournaments, they're not there.
This actually kind of reminds me of one last thing that I want to add. I realize we're still sort of floating around the why are you running this tournament question.
Yeah, we haven't gotten even off the minutes. Scare. That's fine.
This is clearly going to have to be a two-parter, but that's fine. There's one last thing I think that I need to say about the why run a tournament. You know, when going to a tournament and running a tournament are totally different experiences. And most people don't realize that in reality, it's total chaos behind the scenes, or at least it feels like it when you're running a tournament, because you're seeing all of the warts, right? You're seeing everything that's going wrong. But the reality is, on the outside, most people don't see everything that's going wrong. You know, they see a tournament happening. So you need to make sure, if you're running a tournament, that you have the fortitude to deal with this, that you're not going to have a meltdown or a panic attack knowing that you're dealing with all of these things, right? I think that the very first thing that a first-time tournament director discovers is that right before the tournament, it feels like your whole tournament is dropping from you, right? Like everybody just starts dropping entries. It just happens. But that can be really emotional for a first-time tournament director. It seems like people are abandoning you and whatnot, but that just happens at tournaments. So little things like that that you don't pick up on when you're not running a tournament yourself are things that you need to be mentally prepared for when you're running the show.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, that's a very specific point that I put out. I mean, I use tabroom.com. Joy of Tournaments is the same thing. You're going to have, let's say, 100 people sign up. And the next thing you know, it's 10% less. And I think 10% is probably right. No matter what the number is that sign up, when you have the high number, all of a sudden it's 10% less when push comes to shove. It's just the way these things work. One of the things I change almost every tournament is trying to set it up in such a way that I know as well as I possibly can how many people I'm going to have, so I know how much food and so forth and so on to order. This is a tough thing. There's no great answer for this. There's no great solution for this. But you're right. You have to be prepared for it. But I want to take this to a different level, which is because this really points out something that I think is the absolute most important thing, is that when you're running a tournament, you have to have like a goal, okay? And as the tournament director, and this is what I tell the people that are working with me and my students and so forth, we have one goal with this tournament, which is to have debate rounds. We have to have the debate rounds prioritized. We have to have a tournament. That's what we're trying to do. We're doing a lot of other things too, but in terms of priorities, making sure the rounds come off in a timely manner is so head and shoulders above every other concern that we have. So if I'm the tournament director and I have three things or five things coming at me at once that I have to make a decision on, I don't really have to think, because I know the one that is most important is whatever it is that makes the round happen. And everything else takes a secondary position to that. And everybody who's working at my tournament knows this, that when they have to make a decision, it's get the rounds going. Because as John, as you said, sure, everybody's looking at it from the other side. And from the other side, what they're looking at is not sitting around wondering where the schematics are.
Yeah,
you know, what they're saying, they're sitting around saying, oh, geez, I just sat down. You got to go do another round. You know, that's a good thing. You know, judges will complain if you work them to death. But I mean, student, especially in Lincoln Douglas, where you have two flights, you know, there's plenty of downtime built in. I mean, obviously, you have to manage, if you have something like policy, you have to manage it in such a way so that there are breaks and stuff so that people literally aren't exhausted. And you do have to manage your judges so that they aren't exhausted. But the real, as I said, the real thing is you have to have a focus on something, because there's so many things happening at a tournament. And that focus to me is just get the rounds to happen.
I should interject and say, I actually disagree on one point. You should not really be worrying too much about the judges, because you shouldn't be tabbing your own tournament.
Oh, yeah. No, those are different things. Yeah.
Yeah. That seems to be the number one misconception with some new tournament directors. Mm-hmm. You're nuts if you think that you're going to tab the tournament and run it.
It cannot be done.
Wait, I tabbed the Harvard-Westlake tournament.
But, well, I guess maybe I should amend that statement. I think it depends perhaps on the scale of the tournament in terms of the number of people there. That's a fair point because Jim and I have hosted MHLs when we're still running. I mean, I guess it depends on the scale of the tournament. But
if you have a judge pool that is captive, you know, they don't leave, right? And you've got schools that are expert schools. They know what's going on. And you've got varsity-only division, which is kids all know what's going on. They know it's a small campus. It's perfectly fine that I tabbed. I mean, and I had parents to run all the concessions. And I had kids that could unlock doors. I had a master key I gave to a kid. He could unlock doors.
Yeah, but you're exceptional. You've run a lot of tournaments, and you've done a lot of tabbing.
Right, exactly. You're also not
and
first.
And you have a manageable tournament size that you're talking about.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. For a first-timer, they probably should not. I think they should tab their own
tournament. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't tab. I mean, Bump is my big tournament. And, well, first of all, it's in two different buildings, so I wouldn't have to, you know, I couldn't tab it if I wanted to. And second of all, even if I wanted to tab one of them, and John, you'll do the same thing. We'll go, sure. If it's our tournament, we'll go in and take a look when the rounds are being paired, just to keep an eye on things. Not because we don't trust people, but mostly because we're curious and want to see how it's going. And
you're curious, you want to see how it's going, and ultimately you are the accountable person, right? I mean, people aren't going to go, and this happens all the time. At our own tournament, if there's a question, the first impulse that a kid has in the hallway is, oh, there's John Cruz. I'm going to go to him, as opposed to, oh, I'm going to knock on the door where Jim Menick is directing tabulation and go in there. No, Cruz is visible because he's outside because a tournament director should be visible. And as a result, you want to at least, you know, you need to know what's going on at your tournament. The weirdest, the most surreal thing I think about a tournament when you're not tabbing it. So I guess the Harvard Westlake tournament, the Ted Woods, would be an exception to this. But when you're not
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say is when you're not tabbing your own tournament, it's very odd because it's sort of like everything is happening around you, but you're not 100% plugged into what's happening round by round.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's this really weird experience where somebody at the end are like, oh, wait, like I'm, you know, a tournament happened. I didn't even know who was in the elimination rounds.
Or everyone will be talking about some upset that happened and you'll be like, I have no idea what anyone's record is.
You never know.
I'll say that at VBT, I do the pairing myself too. Because I'm just fast at it. I get people like this year it was Adam Torsten and Chris Blay entered ballots. They did that sort of stuff. They did the check sheet. They did all that stuff. But when it came time to place judges, I did it because I can do it quickly. I just know how to do it quickly. And Victor's also very, very fast at that too.
And that's also that isn't all that different from what Jim and I are saying, because even at my own tournament, you know, very large in terms of the number of events and the kids who are there, but I always make sure for the LD division to be in there, and I'm usually as I seem to recall this year, you know, all the pairings were great and Jim did an amazing job, but I remember a couple of times where I said, oh, maybe we want to look at this pairing, this or whatnot.
Yeah, you'll see. I mean, multiple eyes are good. That's why we always have multiple people in the tab room. And another thing is, I mean, as tournament director, you tend to know so-and-so needs a round. You know, they've been judging every round or something like that. Because sometimes if I'm tabbing, I'm just saying I want to have the best judge. And meanwhile, the judge is like dead on their feet kind of thing. And somebody will say, I ran into them and blah, blah, blah. You know, so.
The director has to be more concerned about customer service than the tab room does.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. There's no question about it. You know, it's part of the thing. I mean, you said this. I have tournament in two buildings, and I spend my 2 days essentially going back and forth between the two buildings. I mean, in the first day, I go to I'm in one building, and I go, then I walk to the other building. I just go back and forth endlessly and just, you know, see what's going on and make sure things are going on and everything. And every time you show up somewhere, something's going on and you have to do something. But it's absolutely, as John said, you have to be visible. The minute you're running a tournament and say, I have to get away for a minute, you shouldn't be running a tournament, you know? I mean, it's just not what you do for it's only 2 days of your life or 3 days, whatever. You have to be there all the time.
By the way, this is a good place to point this out. I mean, this is sort of the implied message of what we're saying. We're not trying to scare anyone away, but if you're not up to it, don't do it. It's okay. That's not the end of the world, right? I mean, not everybody has to host a tournament. As I said, in my book, I sort of do feel that that teams that compete a lot sort of have an obligation to do something, give some service back to the community in some format. That's my personal feeling. But I don't think that every school is obligated to run a tournament. Right?
No, not at all. I worked in a tab room at a very large tournament. I won't name the tournament, where the tournament director at 8 p.m. was like, I'm going to go to bed now. left.
That's my kind of tournament director. I like that.
Uh-oh.
Wow. No, it's you know, you're the first one there in the morning and you're the last one out at night. And then the day after it's over, you enjoy yourself.
I mean, while we're talking about that, it probably makes sense to talk about then staffing a tournament.
Yeah.
I know for us, we have, I should say, five primary jobs. We've got the tab room. Mm-hmm. And I also say that the tab room is in pairs. The reason why it's in pairs is because you have one person pushing ballots and the other person checking to make sure that who we push to can go to them. Yeah. And that's if you're using judge mutual preferences and those sorts of things. We have a help desk. We have expediters. The expediters are the people that make sure people are getting to rounds. They make sure all the rounds have started. They're also the ballot runners. Right. And then we also have the hospitality people, who are usually just parents. Is that everything that I mentioned?
Yeah, and I think for the I just want to sort of add an idea for the hospitality person, although maybe that's going out of order. But I think that it's always good to have continuity at your tournament. It's great to have the same people come back, tabulate, the same people come back. But one thing that gets overlooked is that hospitality person. And depending on the scale of your tournament, in my mind, that's one of the most important places to have continuity, because feeding judges and knowing how all these things work and knowing what flooding is, that's actually a little confusing to explain to some parents, even if they know how debate tournaments work generally. Like, we're really lucky at Bronx Science. Matt Denae, who's now an alum, his mom still comes back and helps run things for us. And, you know, while it's not possible for every team maybe to have, like, Eileen Denae come and run your hospitality for you, having somebody who knows what to run every year, so that way you as the tournament director don't need to think how many bags of Skittles do we need to buy and stuff like that. I think it's a really good thing.
I pay absolutely no attention to that. I mean, but there's different levels of hospitality. Yeah, yeah. There's concessions of things that you're selling, which really isn't hospitality, but we have, they're selling water and candy and things like that, which we could talk about at some length if we needed to. The other kind of thing is judge hospitality, which is very, very important, and we could talk about that at length. And the other thing is, if you're actually feeding people, that's, meals have to be served. So there's a lot of levels here, depending on how the first two you have to. Well, you have to have judge hospitality. You can't, because otherwise you'll never get the judges to come back again.
I should interject and say that I don't drink coffee. Like, I've never had a cup of coffee in my life, and it didn't occur to me the very first time I ran a tournament. I mean, it did occur to me that I needed coffee, but it didn't occur to me that
that's the first thing you do.
Priority. Oh my God! Mm-hmm. I mean, If you don't have coffee right away, that's the first. I mean, the people are up in arms, and I know that sounds really silly and like a trivial thing, but it's actually not a trivial thing.
Not trivial at all. No, caffeine is our drug of choice.
This is another place to point out that running a debate tournament, there are a lot of like unsexy elements to it that have nothing to do with the debating, but are essential to running the tournament. The coffee, pretty essential, mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. So it's just important to keep that in mind.
But as long as we're on the hospitality, go ahead, Mike. Yeah.
I was gonna I don't, I'm done with hospitality. So you guys keep going.
I'm gonna say something that Beats pointed out, somewhere else, which was that hospitality for judges is very important because they just you're hiring these people, but they're not gonna come back next year if you didn't treat them well this year. And you know, these are for the most part college kids, and they're not that hard to please. You don't have to have a lot of stuff, but you have to have stuff. There has to be a place where they can go and they can relax. And, you know, it doesn't even have to have comfy chairs, although it'd be nice. Some places do have comfy chairs, but it's not so much comfy chairs as just a place where it's quiet. They can hang out together, put their head on the table, whatever, have something to eat. It can be crap. It doesn't matter. You know, I mean, they're college kids, you know?
So yeah, there's nothing more disappointing than walking into after you've judged around, walking into a lounge and seeing nothing.
Yeah. I mean, you just want to put your hand in that bag of nasty, filthy, crunchy things and if that thing isn't there, you're like, oh, shit. Yeah, it's like, I'm hungry.
I think you need to boop that out.
What?
I want our first view from Tab Boop. But anyway, go on.
But you go into that room and there has to be stuff in the morning. That whole coffee thing, as we say, is absolutely essential. Juice, water, soda, all this kind of stuff. not particularly expensive, but
it's not. That's the thing, is that it's not expensive, and it does so much for goodwill.
Yeah, it's the goodwill of everybody. I mean, the coaches are going to be in there.
Yeah,
the judges are going to be in there.
And this is why you need somebody whose job is to do this for you.
Yeah, you need to have.
Yeah, oh, this is a one person's job.
That causes headaches, and you don't have the time to do this headache. And it's not a fun job, although actually I find that involving parents who like to get to know who it is that their like kids are talking about at home, oh, the coach of this place, oh, this judge, it's actually kind of fun for them. It's a way of seeing these people up close and interacting with them.
One of my debate parents this year, who I had the Harvard Westlake and the Brentwood parents help out with the VBT this year, and she said that it's the first time she got to meet all the other debate parents and just sort of hang out with them like – they get to normally do if their kids play sports at the soccer game or at the basketball game where they're all sitting in the stands. This was their equivalent to that. So she said, ask us back any time to do this sort of thing because they loved just seeing, you know, hanging out with each
other. This is absolutely true. I see the parents and I'm not paying any attention to this whatsoever. And I walk by and there's like five or six people there and they're all the parents. I know some of them better than others, but they're all having a great time. I mean, they're all having fun and they're all talking to each other and getting to know each other and all this sort of stuff and enjoying the fact that they're getting to contribute because let's face it, their kids, this is probably the big activity. So they're getting to be a part of that big activity. It is only once a year. So.
Yeah, and you shouldn't be afraid to ask for help on that either. Parents love doing that. I mean, I've found that anyway.
Well, I absolutely rely on it. I can't run – if I didn't have parents doing stuff, I wouldn't have the tournament. The other thing, by the way, that we didn't mention, another thing that I have to assign somebody to is housing, which, of course, you don't have in a lot of tournaments, but we have housing.
Well, yeah.
And I have to put up 150 people. Yes. Some people put up more, 200, 250 people at some tournaments. I mean, you know, this is a whole other universe. But we do have to do that too. And as tournament director,
if you're doing
director,
housing,
I don't
do it. You need to. I some schools, including mine, have assigned students to do this. This is another thing where you need an adult. I think it starts to get large. Then
this is an absolute adult thing. I wouldn't trust a kid on this for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
So this is here. You guys talk among yourselves. I'll be back. I have to throw the cat out.
Well, that's really awkward. But anyway.
The other thing that I think a lot of tournaments don't do that is something that we do is have at the VBT anyway is have. A help desk that is a buffer between the tab room and, in fact, the tournament director and the people attending the tournament. And
an
the help desk
person.
Well, we have the help desk sitting right out between the way it's set up. We have the judges' room in one room and the student hangout room in the other room. It's at the law school at UCLA, and our help desk is right between it. And our help desk has a phone that is not so. We have a cell phone just because of camp and everything, but we have a phone. That's one phone number that anyone can call with any problem whatsoever. That person has either keys or a phone number they can call to get rooms unlocked. They have the permission, the signed permission thing saying that we have access to all these rooms. They have a list of every room that we have available. And
I think
they have
great.
A list of every
This
schedule.
Is a college thing, though. I mean, because we do this – I mean – As I could having somebody at the colleges though, who is the we have having the one phone number people can call, having the room key guy or whatever, and permission for the rooms and all that kind of stuff, that doesn't come up if you're just running it at your high school.
Well, here's where having the room list helps. If a round gets started late, they can take flight B and put it into a separate room. Into one of the open rooms with a new judge in order to not have that flight B hold everything behind.
I don't have open rooms.
Oh, see.
No, but same with me. I mean, that's important. We do that at our tournament where it's the least ideal room. You obviously don't want to hold like these.
Or a space. So that the help desk is empowered to make decisions so that I don't need to know about it if a round hasn't started yet. As the tournament director, because I just say the help desk is going to do it.
I mean, I like the idea of a help desk, but first of all, I don't have that many people that are helpful, and I don't have that. I don't have the space. I don't think to be able to.
But I think Beats is actually right about in terms of the. It, again, it depends on the scale of your tournament. But even if you have the spare manpower, right? I mean, I think that's a great idea. actually.
Yeah, I mean, we actually hire people to do it, and we pay someone. I mean, you pay them what you pay a judge, and you say, this is your job. And they're in charge. We have one person who is in charge of the help desk. This year it was Josh Anderson. But then from that, we had basically kids helping him. Mm-hmm. And what I found about with kids and help is that you need to schedule them, and you can't just give them – you need to be here between 8 a.m. and 10 p.m. and just stay. If you say to them at – and Jim, you saw what I did. At 8:15 a.m., you need to be doing this. Right. Then you have 20 minutes where you can do nothing. Then at 9:30 p.m. a.m., you have to be doing this. And then you have another 30 minutes. That way, they don't feel like they're going to be stuck there all day, and they won't rebel against that notion. And, see, and in fact, will
see. I think this is a factor of scale, and because I mean, for me, I mean, it's my team. They're not. They like being at the table, and they have the. I mean, for me, it's the ballot table, and is the help desk, and I tell them this. I mean, they are. I call them the concierges. I mean, they are the face of the tournament, and they know that they have to answer questions and help people. They're not empowered to do a lot, but there isn't a lot they need to be empowered to do. But I do have certain rules about how the ballot table needs to be run. I mean, there are a couple of things that are, to me, extremely important. I do not wish to go to a ballot table and see it looking like a dining room. You know, to me, is the ballot table does not allow food. Second of all, if in fact you are going to eat at the ballot table, you are not going to bring in food from outside that's better than the food that I'm giving to the people who paid to come here. This is really annoying when I go to a debate tournament and I'm eating, you know, warmed up ziti, and all the kids sitting at the ballot table, you know, they got sushi and, you know, and all this kind of stuff.
Well, see, you know. Jim is talking to something that I know I'm going to have to probably save for part two of this, because this is like, I could do a dissertation on this, which I believe is the complete tournament experience, which is a very important concept at the end of the day, no matter what scale of tournament you're running. And I think little things like that are very important, right? And I totally agree with Jim that, you know, because then that also tends to have kids who are kind of out of control, kids who aren't really paying attention to what they're doing. If they're focusing more on the outside food, you know, you have outside food for the tab room. Keep your tab people happy. They're working harder.
That's a different thing. I absolutely go out of my way for that.
Anyone but you. The only person who's working harder than the tab staff is the tournament director on some level. And some tournaments, it's a pretty even draw. So but the tab staff is, you know, behind closed doors. Nobody else is seeing the sushi that you brought in. But I agree totally about this.
But I mean, so I mean, part of it is the amount of the scale, the number of kids I have to do these things. But I absolutely agree that, you know, your table. You know, even if I only have the one table, or I have two tables, one in each building. I mean, their job, and I tell them this, is not only just pushing ballots, because especially nowadays, we really don't have to check off who took the ballot, because we print up the ballot with somebody's name on it. We know who took the ballot. You know, so, I mean, there are all these other issues, and chief among them being, you are the face of the tournament. So, you know, be helpful, be, you know, and the other, and don't have all your friends sitting on the other side of the table, you know, so that when somebody has a problem or a question, they can't even get to you without crawling over 57 slugs that, you know, are just whatever.
Yeah, you want it to be the nerve center of the tournament, but at the same time, you don't want it to be the nerve center of the tournament from a social perspective.
Right,
exactly. So, you know, if you're lucky and you can actually designate, but it's hard to designate some other spot because there's just a gravitational pull to the ballot table, because it tends to be, you're going to put your most, your star kids, your captains and all this stuff, you know?
I have my tab staff say they, when it comes to pushing ballots, they're out there with the computer pushing ballots.
Yeah, well, we do that. I mean,
right, there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, we always come out and with the, you know, especially we do that at the college tournaments.
I don't like the tab table being the nerve center. I actually like it to be the place where people just come, check it in, and leave. Because if it's, I mean, two points that were brought up, or one point that was brought up, is you don't need to check out ballots anymore. You don't need to have someone there with the piece of paper. At the same token, you don't need to be checking in ballots either. The lines at Stanford were literally out the door because they sat there and checked names off.
There's no point, especially now the new versions of TRPC where you just click a button. If here's a list of the ones we don't have that you can bring out to the ballot table, and you can go find.
It's a waste of time to do that checking. Mm-hmm. The only thing you should be checking for is just make sure it's filled out correctly.
Yeah, but, I mean, they should be. All of us have screwed up a ballot, so it's nice to have somebody just make sure. Oh yeah, the numbers work. You know, so because we've all left out the numbers.
And as another point, then you should try your best to get the cell phone number of every judge too. Just so that if there is a mistake, if they've walked away, you can get a hold of them.
I mean, that is built into taproom.com. I don't know if it's in
Joy of Tournaments, but I guess you could put it in the notes section, and that's not a bad idea to suggest a Joy of Tournaments.
Yeah.
It's certainly good to have. And it's more, it tends to be the hired judges, or it tends to be some damn parent judge. You know, so be in the novice division, some parent usually who has come with a coach who should be taken out and shot to the coach.
Well, or sometimes I find that it could be a parent judge who is trying to write a very meaningful ballot, but then
I'm not blaming the parents. Yeah, they're not sure what to do, whatever.
Right. They
haven't been told by their coaches what to do. This is a different issue altogether. But coaches, I know coaches who take no responsibility for the parents that they bring along, as if they are some aliens, which doesn't help those parents integrate themselves into this activity, and that's the coach's fault. That's not the parents' fault. The parents are trying hard to do a good job, and they're volunteering their time, and the parents are saying sort of screw you, you know, which is like, no, it's not good. Not good. I'm looking at the we have made it 45 minutes almost.
Well, this could be this is a rich topic that we can continue talking about. We haven't really even talked about when the tournament has started and whatnot.
We haven't even finished
all the jobs yet.
Yeah, so I like this. This is a topic that keeps on giving.
That's what other? Let's finish jobs. I mean, what other jobs?
All right. Well, we said hospitality. We said
hospitality and all the factors of hospitality.
One thing that maybe goes without saying, but I feel like we should say just really quickly, is tabulation staff is really important. First off, it's a draw for your tournament. I think that being able to say so-and-so is tabbing the tournament when you're a new event, especially if you're from a school that has no history of ever hosting a tournament, that's important. So getting somebody experienced to tab your tournament is a good thing.
Yeah.
That's all I really have to say about that. I mean, the rest goes without saying. But
it requires a couple of people. I mean, there's that much work. I mean, and somebody's going to be pushing the ballots, and both eyes on the ballots and checking, and then there's a whole double checking process that we could talk about. But and the other thing is, two people in the ballot room takes away any possibility of people thinking that something's going on in there.
Right.
You know, because I have two different schools, then, you know, I have an obvious check, you know, like, you know, Menick's not going to do something for his kids because, you know, Joe Vaughn's looking over his shoulder.
Right. Yeah. I should jump in and say that speaking of tab, then there's a tab, what I guess I think of as tab support staff. And these are kids. So these are – you need kids who are assigned to be the slaves of the tab room. Very
major
important.
Domo. I call that the major domo.
It's true. Or the myrmidons who will do whatever you say. But yes, the person who is there to help the tab room is really important. Mm-hmm. That job is really good to assign to an experienced kid because it also sounds like it's really a glorious job.
It is
the worst job of all.
With the possible exception
of the other job that people forget about, which is training kids to be able to check ballots. And eventually, if you're going to give out the ballots physically, to sort the ballots. And I guess if you're
scanning them, you still need somebody to
put them in some sort of order.
Yeah, sorting the ballots is another thing. But yeah, I mean, okay, so we have tab room staff of other than the people doing the tabs. So like I said, there's just one major domo. That major domo person or myrmidon or whatever you never know what you're going to need them to do, but they need to be there to do it. Sometimes it's something as mundane as, you know, you can go down and get me a Coke. And a lot of times it's go find so-and-so because we need them and go do, you know, blah, 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 blah. Very specific and that require thinking. It has to be somebody who knows stuff. It has to be a smart person.
Those jobs are also important because you need to make sure that, that sort of relates to another important job, which is that at least at a tournament. Well, let me backtrack. I'm sorry. I'm rambling. You need to think about the physical realities of where you're hosting this tournament, right? If it's a large spread out building like Bronx Science is, it's really important to start having students who are assigned as runners to collect the ballots, people who are on each floor to be the captains and the runners, a hierarchy among the students, especially if you're running a, you know, larger scale tournament or a tournament with multiple events, or most importantly of all, a tournament that is just physically spread out. I think that's really important.
Yeah, well, we've been, while we're at, let's finish this thought, which is, like we, as we said, we need to have ballot checkers. So there's a whole process of checking the ballots where somebody literally looks at the ballot and somebody else looks at the check sheet and they compare the two and make sure they're right. And I tell the people who are doing this that if you don't come to me and find a mistake or question something, you've just done a crappy job. I want these people to come to me and say, this doesn't look right. I want to be able to tell them, aha, I'm right after all, aha. But, you know, they are going to find stuff. And they have to be, you know, they can't, it is a boring job, but it has to be done and has to be done well. So you have to have people to do that who, you know, they could be novices, but they can't be your, like, dumbest ass novices. They got to be, like, good novices. And then,
sorry.
And then after that, there is the stuffers. You got to have somebody on your team who you can go tell to stuff it. And, you know, so though I needed a beep.
That was so corny. Okay.
I do that at every tournament, though, so I'm used to telling that joke. So anyhow, but, you know, these ballots have to be stuffed. Now, you're never going to get 100% correct. I have stuffed ballots myself. It is impossible to, you do it for 2 minutes and you're doing it so wrong. I can't imagine how hard it is to do this, but it has to be done as best as it can be done. Getting a couple of people to do it, probably the same ones who are doing the checking, but it has to be done, and it has to be done as the tournament goes along. It cannot be saved for later because it's just, you know, going to be 200, 500, 1,000 ballots that have to be stuffed, you know, two for each you know, round into two different schools. Yeah, it's a lot of ballots, you know, again, they got to be copied, blah, 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 blah. So you need those people. So right there, we probably have at least three people, maybe five or six people, depending on the size of the tournament, maybe even more. Like, John, I'm sure with your tournament, because you have,
we have a
policy, room, which is a whole other universe.
Yeah, we have we run an open tab where it's really important to me. And that's a, while I agree with Jim that the first and most important thing of any tournament is that the rounds have to happen. After that, I think then you start to question what is it that I need at my tournament? What is, you know, the idea of my tournament? And I've been really pushing the idea of the immediate access to ballots. So as a result, I really staff that room a lot, right? With kids who have done it before, kids who are going to train the next generation of the stuffers, et cetera. The stuffers, what an unglorious job. But it's important.
Stuffery.
And Jim is totally right. The last thing is that look, this is the job that everyone wants to put off because it's so boring. And then this is the job that causes the chaos at the last minute of the tournament, right? Especially, I find, you know, on the national circuit, it is becoming more and more common to scan things, I guess. And maybe that's where everything's going.
It still takes time, though.
But it takes time. And the other thing is that, and maybe I'm making the wrong generalization here, but I still think at most local tournaments, there's an expectation you're getting your ballots right back, right? Like immediately. Yeah. Like there's no idea of like, oh, I'll wait until tomorrow. Like you want to read them on the bus ride back. That's totally fine. I think that's great. But that's a very like, you know, I can think of a lot of terms I attended when I was in high school where that was just the thing you did. And I still think that's like part of the running the local area tournament. And since virtually every tournament starts as a local area tournament, that's an important thing. At the last minute, if you don't have ballots, coaches who are coming to your tournament, some of them are going to get annoyed at you. That's going to be the last impression you left. Oh, we didn't get your stuff back to you. Sorry about that. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's important. This, again, Beats used a really good analogy for this. Is a customer service thing, right? I mean, people are your customers. So leaving them happy is how you want to leave them.
Have we left out any
jobs?
Assignments, jobs, yeah.
Cleaning.
Oh, let me say one thing about cleaning. That's a great point. The worst part of the turn. Okay, here's my what I always tell the kids about this, and I'm adopting a new system for this for next year. So I'm gonna announce it here on The View from Tab. Okay? It's very exciting.
I'm thrilled.
This is important, though, because this goes back to the – do you have the fortitude to run the tournament? Running a debate tournament is not glorious. You will get probably a couple of emails afterwards that say thank you for running a fun tournament, especially if you did a good job. And you can pat yourself on the back. The best part of the tournament is when it's over because you get to sleep. But oftentimes, especially if you're a teacher, you're expected to be back at work the next day. Okay? And now – What you need to know about this is that teachers are going to find all sorts of problems. They're looking for problems to complain about. You left a bagel on my desk. You didn't, you know, you unplugged an Ethernet cord. This is what people are looking for. And it's just a fact of it. And the thing is that because the building gets vacated, right? You try to get everybody out so you can have it for your debate tournament. Nobody else who works in your building ever really sees the debate tournament. They don't understand the scope of what's going on. So when you don't clean effectively, it's all you hear about when you get back, right? You never, the school doesn't, and it's not that the school is being mean. It's just that's from their perspective what they see of your tournament, right? The bagel on the desk, the papers on the floor, the desk's out of arrangement. So what we're doing is, and this is really vital in our tournament because it's just so large. We use so many rooms that each kid is going to be specifically assigned a room or two. And this is a room where I actually am modeling this after the VBI checkout sheet. At the end of VBI, you have a little form that a staff member has to sign off on, certifying that your room is up to cleanliness standards. I think it's a really good system to use at a tournament, especially if you have a hierarchy among the students. Okay, so the floor captain here, you're in charge of checking all the rooms, and the floor captain is going to sign off on the room. It's not going to eliminate every headache, but it's going to definitely reduce them. And again, this is the least glorious part of the tournament. The worst part is coming in and having the problem list from, you know, your assistant principal or whatever. And generally, again, it's not that anyone's trying to be mean. Your assistant principal is probably really supportive of you because they let you have the tournament in the first place. But it's their job to report back to you the problems. And then, unfortunately, it's your job to fix them. But if you make it the kid's job to deal with the problem in the first place, you can reduce a lot of stress for yourself. I think that's
this year at the Harvard Westlake tournament, I had the kids just take pictures of the room that they were in charge of with their camera phone.
Lexington does that. Yeah.
So that we can, so that they know how to put the room back together.
They take a before and after pictures because it's extremely important. You're right. I mean, you're taking the classroom. I mean, a lot of schools, that's that teacher's home.
Office. Yeah.
And, you know, they have things the way they want them. And they're very generous to let you have it for the weekend. And it's nice to give it back to them the way they got it. No question about that.
Tara Tate at the Glenbrooks does this great thing, which we also borrowed, and it really works wonders, which is to spare the few dollars you need to do this and buy like a candy bar or a little tiny piece of candy for every teacher. And if they have their own desks, if your school is lucky enough that each teacher has their own room, you can leave it there. You can leave it in their mailbox, thanking them for the use of the room over the weekend. Teachers like little things like that. Something that's great.
Stephen Bouchard sent out – I know that what he sent out after his tournament last year was this really cool – he sent it to all the teachers and administrators at Lakeland schools.
Yeah.
And it was just like, during this past weekend, X number of debaters debated X number of rounds debating, spoke X number of minutes speaking. And it just sort of – it was a very cool thing to do that I wish I would have thought to do after the Harvard-Westlake tournament.
Brings up something that I can't emphasize enough. Everybody who wants to run a tournament goes to tournaments. If you see something interesting or good that you like, steal it.
Definitely.
Do it yourself.
And I want to just jump in and say that that email left a big impression on me, and I did the exact same thing. We calculated like, wow, like 1,000 debates happened in our building on Saturday. That's unbelievable, right? Sharing that kind of information with people, they don't know what – a lot of these people think that you go to a debate tournament and there's like one debate, right? Or you're debating one school and you beat them, and then that's the debate tournament. When they start to understand the magnitude of what you're doing, even when it's a smaller tournament – they are impressed, and that carries over, I find, not just for the tournament, but for debating in general. You know, teachers who tend to give a hard time about kids signing out of classes and things like that can become more supportive when they feel included. And I think that's I think what Stefan did with that letter was great, and for the sake of full disclosure, I completely copied it when I had my tournament.
That's the thing. Copy the good stuff, because you see good things, and you should do those things. You know, then all tournaments get better as we all borrow good ideas.
It's like best practices.
And bad practices, don't do them. If you go to a tournament and you see something you don't like, don't do that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's sort of obvious. But
it's the golden rule.
You know, you should be seeking out good stuff. You should seek out good stuff. Okay, well, now we're hitting the hour mark almost.
So we should continue.
We will have this to be continued.
And this is a great opportunity, by the way, for readers who have questions specifically about tournaments that you think we might not address to ask them. I think, right? I mean, this is going to be the topic we're continuing with next week.
Yeah, especially if they have questions about how things are paired and stuff like that too. I think there's some nuts and bolts stuff where every year
tournament high low? Are we using
yes, stuff like that. Is round two lag powered?
My goodness. High low?
in brackets or power pit protected.
Yeah, round seven of the VBT.
I was that kid. It's okay.
Round seven of the VBT is pure high low. Highest seed hits the lowest seed.
That's exciting. Okay, on that note, we will get back together next week and see everybody then. Okay, bye. Take care.
Bye.